Andrew.
Hi, Courtney. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for doing this.
That's all right.
You're down in Sydney.
I am, yeah.
You've got two kids, don't you?
Yes.
Are they still young?
They are. I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Nice. How's business?
Really good. It's been busy, but, you know, manageable, which has been really good.
Oh, good. Do you structure it around your family?
I try to.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Your husband works as well?
He does. He works in the city, so he's commuting, and it's usually about over an hour, hour and 20, depends on how long it takes him to get home in the afternoon. So he's usually gone from, you know, 6 to 6 every day. And for some parts of the year, we've been lucky enough to have an au pair. And then some parts of the year we don't. So I try not to overload myself. But when I've got an au pair, then I know that I have more time to do stuff. So it's really helpful.
Cool.
Yeah.
When you hire an au pair, do you have someone from Australia or is that always someone from overseas?
It's always someone from overseas.
Is that the way it works with au pairs?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Because, I mean, I've got a friend whose daughter went over to France to be an au pair. So you don't hire people from your own country. Is that right?
Generally, I think that I have seen in some of the groups where people have hired local people more. And so I guess they're kind of more like a live-in nanny. But the idea is just, it's different because you want international people that are here on a working holiday. So it's all kind of part of like a cultural exchange. And so that's the idea behind it. So I would say like 95% of them are usually international backpackers or students sometimes. They could also be studying here or they're just over on a working holiday visa. They love kids and it kind of is like the perfect combination for them. So they get a safe place to stay in and they get time to visit and actually live in Sydney, which is a big deal for them.
For sure. Which country do you go for when you select an au pair?
Well, I go for America because I'm American.
That's not very fair.
I know.
I knew you would say that.
I'm kind of like, well, my kids, you know, I try to like show them both cultures. So they get the Australian. That's like a given. They're going to get that. So if they get just another American in the house, I'm like, yes. I don't feel so outnumbered.
Fair enough.
But I have had a girl from the UK as well. I've only had 3. And the last one has been kind of our favorite. She's come and she's back now. So she was here a little while ago as well. And then she went back home and now she's back here for a little bit again. So, yeah, but it's hard having someone live in your house. It's kind of, it's a tricky situation. So it has to be the right person.
Yeah.
So
when you have someone like that, can you book in more work and do you get more things done?
I can book in so much more work. Yeah. The only way that I was able to write my workshop and build the website for that was because I had her here. If I hadn't had her here, there would have been no way to be able to balance the clients as well as writing all of the content for the workshop at the same time. So yeah, it definitely has allowed me to do more work and also to travel and to take work more interstate. So when I don't have an au pair, it's almost impossible for me to work and travel whenever I want to.
So how long do they stay with you when you book one or hire one?
It depends. So I think legally they're supposed to stay with you for 6 months maximum with one family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had Addison 3 months last time and then 3 months again this time. And so it just sort of has to be all up, a total of that amount all up. They usually can only get a visa to last them for a year. So we typically, like, they can only stay in the country for a year on the visa, and they usually can work with 2 families. So the other 2 girls that we've had, one of them didn't last that long, and the one before that was...
Hang on, because of you or because of her?
It was mutual.
That says to me it was you. It was you, wasn't it?
It was tricky when you can only interview someone so well on Skype, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, and the other one was 3 months and she was great. So yeah, around 3 months I think is good. And then 6 months if you really like the person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, have you got a glass of water or a cup of tea or something handy?
I do.
This is PhotoBizX episode number 211. And today's special guest is US-born, Australian-based stills and videographer Courtney Holmes. She shoots both formats at the same session for her family shoots. She's found a way to make it work and to make it profitable. That interview's coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the Photo Biz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. I'm excited to bring you this interview today. I've had it ready to go for a while. It's one of those interviews where I can't wait to release it and share it with you because I know this is going to be, well, it could be a life changer if you're considering shooting video along with your stills and you shoot families. I don't know if I was a wedding photographer. But after interviewing Craig George for the Photography Experiment podcast a couple of episodes ago, he's doing exactly that as well, shooting stills and video, Super 8 video, at the same wedding himself. Crazy. I don't know how these guys are doing it. Courtney, well, I do. I'm lying because I have already interviewed Courtney and Craig. But Courtney is sharing exactly how she does it, how she approaches this, and how she's gone from a $500 per session photographer to a busy, sought-after photographer making a lot more than that. Like I said, it's coming up in just a minute. As far as me and my week goes, I've been working hard to complete this Facebook ad strategy course to make it easier if you're looking at implementing that strategy after hearing the Bernie Griffiths interviews. So more about that when it does become available. What I've been noticing and struggling with is bad habits. I don't even know if they're bad habits, but look, I've got so much on my plate. I'm trying to get through so much each day or, you know, by the end of the week. And my normal thing when I wake up, whether it's at 6 o'clock or 6:30, is my eyes are barely open. I reach over and grab my phone and I check my emails. I flick through those, delete the ones that I don't need, keep the ones that I need to reply or respond to. I don't usually reply at that time. And then I go from email into Facebook and I jump straight into the PhotoBizX premium members group, see what's been going on there. If I've missed anything, if I have to comment or reply or help anyone there. So that usually takes a little while. Then I jump over and check a little bit of my normal Facebook feed. And then I'll jump out of there, go and have a look at Instagram, which I haven't been doing much of lately, but I'll still go in there and have a look. And then I'll hop over into Twitter. And like before I know it, like an hour's gone and I'm still laying in bed. So I don't know if that's, is that wasted time? Like, should I be doing something else with that time? Or should I just enjoy that time on social media and checking my email and just laying in bed? I really am torn. I know that if I'm going bike riding, if I'm meeting some mates to go for a ride in the morning, then, you know, I'm up, out the door, bang, off and running. But it's the days when I spend an hour or hour and a half, yeah, it does happen, you know, flicking around on my phone. It's not till after I get up I think, I've just wasted an hour or an hour and a half. I could have been doing this, this or this. I could have been doing something to help my business. I could have been working on the podcast. I could have been writing a blog post. I could have been out walking with Linda and Roxy. I could have been out on my bike. There's all these things I think I could have done. But at the same time, while I was laying there fiddling around with my phone, I was enjoying it. I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to get out of bed. I didn't want to start the day. So yeah, I'm torn. Are you in the same position as me? I mean, have you faced this? How do you get out of it? Like, should I be feeling guilty about that time laying there doing nothing? Well, laying there, I guess, wasting time on social. Well, I don't even want to call it that because I know it's not 100% wasted because I'm enjoying what I'm doing while I'm doing it. It's not until afterwards that I feel that guilt or I feel like I've wasted that time. I should have been more productive or productive in another way. Anyway, I don't know if you go through the same thing. It could be a different time of day for you, or you might be doing exactly the same as me, you know, because I know that people are commenting and replying and liking things that I'm putting out there, particularly inside the in the members group, because that's where I spend most of my time at that time of day. So it's not only me. I know that's for sure. So tell me if you know an easy way to break that habit, or do you think I should even try and break the habit? Is it a bad habit, or should I just enjoy that time? I really am lost. I guess I have to figure that part out first myself, and then I'll be able to relax more about it. But the thing I hate the most is feeling guilty about the feeling of having wasted that time. That's the worst part. That's what I struggle with the most. Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Leave a comment in the comments area. If you're in the members Facebook group, let's have a chat in there about it. And yeah, if you've got some suggestions, let's hear them. I am open.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In last week's episode, I interviewed Karen Sperling from the States. She is an artist, a Corel expert, and she takes photos from professional photographers and creates painted art from those photos. And she does that digitally and also with paints and brushes and oils and canvases and all the things that you think of when you think of a real artist. But what Karen pointed out to me and what I learned last week was you can be an artist using a digital platform. You don't need to use brushes and paints. I keep going to say real brushes and real paints. And you know, after speaking to Karen, she made me realize that it's the same thing inside software if you are using the same skills and the same techniques. I found I had to be very careful with the wording that I've used, even since then, and making comments following her interview about not offending her and not calling or not referring to painting with paints and brushes as real art, because yeah, as she pointed out and as she showed me with her work, you can be a real artist and still utilize a digital platform or medium to create that art. If you haven't heard that interview, go and check it out. I had some really surprising moments to hear that some of her clients are getting $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 for an individual piece of artwork. Just incredible. Blew me away. Have a listen if you haven't heard that one. I think you'll find it interesting.
You're listening to Photo Biz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Alrighty, we're going to jump into this interview with Courtney Holmes in just a second. If you're hearing this announcement, you are listening to the free podcast episode. And if you're a premium member and you're hearing this, you are listening to the wrong version of the podcast. You shouldn't hear this announcement for the premium membership and what you might be missing out on if you're listening to the free podcast, because I cut all this out if you're a premium member. So email me if you are a premium member and hearing this announcement. So if you are a free listener and you're hearing this announcement, it's just to let you know that you will only be hearing half or just a little bit more than half of the interview with Courtney. I do save the second half, which to me is usually the part where the guest opens up a little bit more, particularly when we dive into marketing their business, how they're getting their clients, how much they're charging. We get into the nitty gritty of the business side of things. And that's when, you know, the guest is feeling more comfortable. They start to open up and relax and talk about things a little bit more freely. So I save that section for premium members only. But in doing that, I want to make sure that you're getting great value from the free podcast as well. You know, I want to share how good Courtney's business is with you, how she structured her business, how she's made a success of shooting video and stills, which you'll hear all about in just a minute. I want you to get as much as you possibly can out of the free podcast, but I do want you to be aware that you are missing some of the great stuff that the premium members are getting. And if you want to hear that, particularly with Courtney today, head over to photobizx.com/try. And for $1, you can sign up. You get a 30-day trial membership, so you can hear the full interview with Courtney. And if you are a day-in-the-life shooter, if you're shooting documentary-style family photography, then you're going to want to do this. Go and sign up, pay $1, get access to the full interview with Courtney. It'll help you in your business. She shares so much in that second half. In addition to hearing the full interview with Courtney today, you can get access to the full back catalog. There's 210 other interviews that you can go and check out. Now, obviously, you won't have time to do that in the 30 days. So pick out a few of the interesting ones, have a listen, see if the membership is a good fit for you, see if you can pick up some hints and tips and ideas to implement in your business, and try and do that in the 30 days. I think if you can do that, you'll appreciate just how valuable the premium membership is, and you can stay on after your 30 days. It goes to $20 a month after that, but I can guarantee that if you have the ability to implement just a part of what you hear, the membership will pay for itself over and over and over again, guaranteed. And if you don't believe me, or if you don't want to take my word for it, and I get that, go and check out some of the iTunes reviews, have a look at some of the testimonials over at photobizx.com, and you'll get a good feeling right away just how valuable the members do find the podcast. And not only the interviews themselves, it's the Facebook group. It's a secret Facebook group, so you can't even see it if you're not a member. You have to be a premium member to be a part of it. What people share in the group is it's amazing. Like people open up and we share literally everything about our businesses. And we even get a little bit personal sometimes if someone's struggling with something. And as a group, we come together and we help each other. We're sharing our ad copy. We're sharing our marketing strategies. We're sharing our successes and we're sharing the things that don't work or haven't worked that we've tried. And we try and help each other to get past that or to rejig it and find success. So yeah, there is so much that comes with your premium membership. All I can say is go and check it out for a dollar, see if it's a good fit. So photobizx.com/try.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Although I haven't seen the term on her website, I think I can safely describe today's guest as a day in the life photographer and filmmaker. The byline on her website says, creator of films and photos for families, teacher of filming life, a filmmaking workshop for photographers. I'm talking about Courtney Holmes, who is American-born, internationally published, and now based in Sydney, Australia. Courtney moved here in 2006 and lives here with a husband and her two young children. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Why Australia?
Oh, why Australia? Well, I was living in Tennessee when I was 21, and I was just trying to spend a summer away from my hometown. And I was up in Maine working as a camp counselor, doing theater, actually. And I met my husband there, and he was Australian and traveling. And it was really meant to be a summer fling, and it kind of ended up being a bit more. We were engaged within 7 months, married within 9 months, and then I was living in Australia a year later.
Wow. What did your family have to say about that?
They didn't love it. They really didn't love it. They came around to it. You know, they just wanted me to be happy. So that was their main thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, like your kids leave. That's a big deal. So in hindsight, it's interesting because at the time, you know, I didn't have kids and now I have kids. And I think if my kids did this to me, I would be devastated. So I think they handled it really, really well.
Oh, that's good. Look, my son is traveling at the moment overseas, and the last instruction he got from my wife was do not fall in love.
Yes. Yes.
So you weren't even a photographer back then, I imagine. Were you just out of school and working in summer camp?
That's right. I was at uni. I was studying music, and I'm a singer, and I play the flute as well, not as much anymore, but I was playing the flute. I had music scholarships to university. That's what I did. That was my life. And then I sort of was gradually moving into theater and doing musical theater. So I was more on the other side of the camera. Like I wasn't typically behind the camera. I was in front of the audience and all of that. So yeah, it was very different. My dad had a camera. My dad used to, he had a video, like a camcorder, and he made videos of us all the time. And he would take photos of us all the time, too. I was like his muse. And so, yeah, no, I was interested in it, but not in the way that I am now by any means. So, yeah, no, I didn't really know anything about photography then.
So you fit into that stereotypical mold of, you know, the newish mum discovers photography because they're taking photos of their kids and then they decide to create a business out of it. Is that you?
Totally, yes.
Okay, well, mums like that, they cop a bit of a bad rap sometimes inside the photography industry. Yeah, so you've noticed that?
Yes. The mom tog, totally.
Exactly, exactly. Did you have to fight against anything to break through that, or you just didn't even let it bother you?
Definitely. I mean, when you first start, and especially when you're self-taught, you have so much self-doubt, and then you have everyone kind of seeing it as a hobby and not really taking it seriously. And even though you're taking it seriously, it's really hard to sort of break through that hobbyist mentality and to really see it as a profession and then to see it as, you know, an art as well.
Do you mean for yourself internally, or you mean getting that out to other people that, hey, I'm a serious photographer?
Internally, but also that side of it as well. For other people, I think my family's always been really supportive. I never had anyone saying anything. So it was probably really all internal. I never had anyone putting me down in any way. I mean, people were always supportive. All of the earliest clients that I had were always really supportive. But I think that
I had it in my head that I was way more serious than what it felt like other people were taking me as from very early on.
Are you talking about your clients now? Like, were they taking you serious?
Yeah, clients and families, like my family as well.
So they were or they weren't taking you seriously as a photographer?
I felt like they weren't taking me very seriously, yeah.
Did that have anything to do with the prices that you were charging?
Probably.
Were they too low looking back?
Definitely. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even really want to charge at first. With the way that it started was I was, you know, the Bonds baby competition.
I've heard of it. That's like you basically you take photos of your babies or you put your baby in for photos?
You take the photos and then you submit them. And I was trying to take photos of my son and my mother-in-law had a DSLR and I had just a point and shoot. And I asked if I could borrow the DSLR. And then I fell in love with it from there. And so then my dad bought me a DSLR for Christmas that year. And it was a Rebel. That's what I started with. And then when friends started to notice that I was taking photos, then people would ask me to take photos for them. And I didn't even feel comfortable at that time charging. So it would be like $50.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I sort of started to see it as potentially a profitable business. And then I started charging like $200.
Whoa.
Huge jump. And then I was lucky enough to meet a local photographer who to me seemed like she really knew what she was doing. And I was so excited to meet her. I met her just at a local photographer meetup and we became friends. She lived literally three streets away and she looked at my work and she looked at my pricing and she was the one who was like, Courtney, what are you doing? Your work is good enough. You should be charging more. And in a really supportive way. I've kind of always been all inclusive. So I jumped from $200 to $1,500 overnight.
Wow. Okay. That's a big move.
It was a huge move. I'm kind of impulsive in a way. And I was like, I had read enough and researched enough and started to be in enough groups where I would see these people who would start low and then they would gradually increase their prices over time. And I could see that they were struggling because their clients wouldn't always come with them. And would just sort of see that struggle. And I thought to myself, I'm better off marketing towards a higher end and finding those clients early on than trying to convince people constantly throughout the year as I raise my prices. And so I just decided to just go for it. And I thought, I'll just go $1,500. We'll see who books it. And I did. And then I booked someone that week at that price. And that was the confidence boost that I needed.
How were you even booking clients then? How were they finding you?
Facebook, mostly. Facebook and word of mouth.
Right. Did you have a website then?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay. Were you actually advertising on Facebook or just posting, you know, on your page or your personal profile? Hey, I'm a photographer.
Yeah, mostly just posting. And I mean, I had done branding and I had a website and all of that and was blogging and things like that. But I found I wasn't really getting that much through Google. If I was getting any interest, it was generally through Facebook. If I would like run a sale or, you know, some sort of incentive or something like that. And then mostly word of mouth. And at the time, I was really big in this community of baby wearing moms.
Baby wearing?
Baby wearing, yes.
What do you mean by that? Is that just the name of the group?
Well, Sydney Baby Wears is the name of the group, but it's...
Oh, okay. Oh, Baby Wears. Right, okay.
Yeah. So it's like woven wraps and stretchy wrap, hug above, ergo baby, if you know any other...
So products for babies, things that they would wear?
No. So they're like baby carriers.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, so you're in that group and what are you actually advertising in that group?
I wasn't advertising in that group, but I was a really big part of that group because that's something that I was doing as a parent, as a new mom, because I just found that easier to get out and about to carry my baby and have my hands free. And so I was really passionate and a big part of that group. And I would take photos at the meets and that the encouragement and support from the women there, the moms there, when they would see the photos kind of helped with that word of mouth to grow.
Was it the mums in that group booking you for shoots and paying the $1,500 or they were spreading the word about you? How did that work?
So this was when it was like $200, that group.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
So what did they say, or what was the feedback you got when you jumped to $1,500 overnight?
I didn't really get much feedback, to be honest.
Everything went quiet.
It went quiet. Yeah, definitely went quiet. I didn't really announce it. I've never really announced big price jumps because I don't think that's very smart. So, you know, it was kind of just, as I've grown, I think people, I'm assuming here, but I guess, you know, I did have clients who, I had one client particularly who had booked me at the $200 rate. And then she booked me at the $1,500 rate probably about a year later. So she was there and she knew that price jump. And I've had several that have kind of come along with me on that journey and they haven't questioned it. If anything, they're like, you deserve this. They see it as a positive thing. And I'm lucky in that regard, but it certainly hasn't been everybody. But I will say that I wasn't doing that much at $200 for it to be a huge deal. So it was super early that I jumped to that pricing.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I had done some work before that, but most of the work that I was doing that helped me to improve my skills was personal work, you know, shooting my kids on a daily basis.
What's your husband's name?
Dan.
So when did Dan start to think, okay, this is a serious business?
Oh.
Are you going to say last week?
I don't know if he's ever really...
Oh, is that right? Well, I hope he listens back to this.
He'll kill me. Now, he has been extremely supportive. And, you know, I think when initially he was really hesitant when I wanted to raise my prices from $200 because he was kind of like, but people are booking you at $200. Why do you want to raise your prices? And I was just, you know, he's not in the photography world and he's the head of operations at the company that he works for. He's very business orientated. He's doing an MBA right now. And, you know, he's definitely an ear for me whenever I talk to him about business ideas and stuff like that. I think probably last year when things started to really ramp up, he started to take it more seriously and see that things were going well. And because last year was probably my biggest year in business so far. So it was then, which, you know, that was 3 years after I started.
Right. Okay. Can you give us a snapshot of your business now? Because I know there's multiple parts to it, isn't it? Because you do the training and you also do your own photography. And I think you also do some work for photographers, don't you? As in creating their videos and promos.
Yeah.
So, yeah, can you give us a snapshot of where you're at?
Sure. So my daughter is not in any kind of childcare. So when I don't have an au pair, I'm home all the time. I get Saturdays off to work, actually. So when I'm in that situation, the work that I do needs to be focused around less so on taking clients, maybe just one a week max, and usually just on a Saturday. And then at the same time, running the workshop, which has only been running since June. And then the same with doing promotional videos for photographers. And I've done other companies as well. I usually would maybe only do one of those a month. When I have an au pair, I have more time to do all of that. So it's sort of hard to work out what like a percentage would be of each part. But the bulk of my work that I was doing probably in the lead up to June was a mix of personal work and client work, families and newborns specifically. And then every now and then I was doing brand films for small businesses. And I've done brand films for corporate clients. I've done a recruitment consultant. I've done a brand film for Jewels Australia, which is a pram company. But I really love working with photographers because I feel like I understand them. I understand their marketing. I understand how to create a film that would make people want to book them. So I really, really love working with photographers. I'd say probably that would be about 10% of the business. And then the families and a lot of personal work. I just do a lot of personal work because I feel like that helps me grow as an artist.
But that's unpaid, isn't it? That's 100% personal. That's for you.
Correct, correct.
Okay.
But I believe that that's what has made me improve so much so quickly. And, you know, although it's unpaid, I feel like it's still crucial in order to do well with the paid work.
Right, okay. Can you give me a ballpark of the revenue that you're doing?
Revenue for last year was $75,000.
Okay, great. If a photographer tells me, gives me a revenue figure, usually I'm taking half of that as profit. Would that be around?
Yeah.
So you're putting a fair bit back into the business and got expenses and things to go with it.
Yes, definitely.
Cool. Okay. Are you shooting on average one client a week?
Yes.
And how many of those clients are taking film and photography?
Probably about 85 to 90%, most of.
Oh, okay. So that's become a big part of your business.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. How did film get introduced into the business?
Well, when I got my 5D Mark III, I knew that it shot video. And my dad, because I was consulting with him about cameras, and he was like, you know, the 5D Mark III is so great for video. And I was like, yeah. Because it wasn't really a big deal for me at the time. And so my daughter was, how old was it? She was about 7 months old when I started to play around with video. She turned 3 in July. So I started to play around with it. And then I started to play around with it during client sessions. But I just didn't know what I was doing. And I was finding it really hard to find information on Google. And 1 year after she had turned 1, and I just decided I wanted to set up this scenario of something that is sort of an everyday thing for us, which was her having a bath in the kitchen sink. And I wanted to shoot that. I wanted to shoot something that would be really meaningful for me, because that would be motivating for me to figure out how to edit it. But opening up Premiere Pro was like, I just would look at it and shut it down because it was so confusing and I didn't even know where to start Googling, and I just was so confused by it. And so I thought, the only way I'm going to sit down and figure this out is if I have something that I love to work on. And so I shot her. So I did that and put this film together, found some music, put it all together, and it was, you know, super, super basic, but I cried. Like, I cried throughout making the whole thing. I cried afterwards. I still cry when I watch it. It was so emotional. And I also took photos, too, because I was like, if this fails, I need to have something that comes out of it. And so, you know, the photos are beautiful. I mean, they're emotional and I love them. But the film is just worlds apart. I mean, it just makes you feel so much more, I feel, than what the photos do. And so from there, I felt like every parent deserves to have this of their child.
So how did you start getting bookings for doing both?
How did I start getting bookings? Well, I just started doing them.
Even without asking the client, just what you just said, I'm going to shoot some video at this session as well.
Yes.
Instead of charging for it, you just did it. Was that to build a portfolio?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Okay, so how long after that did clients start asking for it, and how much were you charging?
So the way that I did it was I already had a few photography clients that were booked in, and I said to them, look, I've started doing video. Would it be okay with you? Because the thing about starting to do video and to shoot enough video in a session to create a film, you need to have more time. And so because one or the other is going to be sacrificed. So if you're shooting video and you're not getting photos of those moments, then you're potentially losing some photos that they could have had, right? So I needed to approach them as saying, look, I've started doing video, started incorporating video, and I'd really love to do this in your session. It would mean that I would spend an extra hour with you. It would be of no charge to you, but I would need for you to be okay with me showing this online. And, you know, most of them were like, yes, please. That would be amazing.
Did you promise those clients that they would get a copy of the video?
Yeah, yes. But I will say that I didn't promise them anything. I just said, I'm experimenting here with video, and I can't promise you that anything's going to come out of this, but I would really like to try during your session. And if you're okay with that, then I'm going to do this. And if something great comes out of it, then you will get that.
For free, so included?
Included, yeah.
Right, okay. All right, great. So that really was a portfolio building process. This is more about you getting footage that you can later use to sell.
Correct.
Sell more sessions.
Potentially, you know, exactly. A portfolio building exercise to be able to then advertise it as an option for sessions later, because people don't understand it until they see it.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so today 80 to 90% of the clients are asking for both. What does a package cost and what does it include when you go out and do one of these sessions?
So last year the price was $14.95 for a photography session with a film. And this year I've gone up to $2,500 for a photography session with a film, but they are also getting an album included in that price as well.
Okay. When you say an album, like 10 by 10 with 10 photos?
Yeah. 10 by 10 with probably 30 photos.
Okay. And then you pick all those or does the client pick them?
I'll pick them.
Oh, so yes. You're doing everything. Okay, that's great. And the video, I mean, I imagine, I don't know anything about video. Does it take a lot of time?
It does. It takes about double the amount of time to edit the photos.
Okay. And again, so you choose all the clips, you choose the photos, you choose them, you do everything, and then they come in. So they basically pay their $2,500 and they come when you're ready to pick up the whole lot.
I send it to them, yes.
Oh, okay. So they're not coming back for an in-person sales session. There's no upselling.
No.
Okay. So it's really, once they pay, you get left alone to go and do the work.
Yes.
That's pretty nice too, in one way.
Yes.
So, okay, so on the day when you're shooting, talk to me about that. So is it two cameras, two different lenses, two completely different setups? Like how are you shooting video and stills on your own?
No, it's one camera. It's one lens. I just switch. I switch on the back of the camera. There's a little switch to shoot video. My approach is documentary. So
day in the life, when I called it that earlier. Is that right? Is that a good way to describe? Okay.
Yeah, definitely. So there's not any directing from me. And before the session, I'll talk to them about what their normal routine is so that I have an idea so that I can anticipate as many things as I can. But generally, I don't necessarily know what's going to happen. And so whenever I go into a client's home, after I've sat down and spoken to them and, you know, met everybody if I haven't already and gotten to know the kids and sort of, you know, gotten everybody comfortable, I'm not necessarily fly on the wall approach. I am still engaged with people and, you know, I'm there. And so the day just flows as it normally would. And I'm just there and I'm taking photos and I'm talking to them. But the way that I do it when I'm switching between photos and stills is that I approach the session as a series of scenes. So if when I get there, the family's in the kitchen, that's one scene. If they're doing something specific in the kitchen, that's one scene. And then if they move into another part of the house, it's another scene. If one of the kids goes into their bedroom and I follow them, that's another scene. So within each scene, then I'm moving around the scene and I will, depending on what the priority is, whether that's photos or video, usually it's always video.
So why is that the priority all the time or most of the time?
So usually I'll talk to them when they book me to include a session with a film. Usually the film, the video clips are what's the most important to them. And I say to them, you know, because none of the moments are scripted, none of it is posed, none of it is guided by me. So if a moment happens and I'm shooting video of it, I need to know what the priority is, whether the priority of the session is going to be video, then I'm going to shoot video first and then shoot stills after. So that way, there's still going to be great stills that you get out of it. But all of the moments that happen, the priority would always be the video. But if for them, the priority is going to be the photos and the film is just kind of like extra, then I would shoot the stills first and then grab whatever footage I could of that scene once I got the stills that I wanted.
Okay, so that's going to depend on the conversation you have with the family before you start shooting.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right, got it. Let me ask you, let's say you talked about different scenes there and little Johnny goes off into his room and you follow him and you're shooting video because that's the priority. And he gets bored after you've got a few clips or enough that you feel, but you haven't had a chance to take any stills and he leaves the room.
Yeah.
You grab him by the wrist and say, Johnny, stay in here and keep playing for a bit longer.
No. No, I don't.
So what happens? You haven't got any stills. Do you need the stills?
No, he'll come back. There'll be plenty of opportunities. No, I don't.
Okay. So the stills don't have to match up with the video exactly.
No, they don't.
Okay. All right. I just had this picture of you, yeah. Slinging him back in there.
Oh, remember how I said no guidance? Yeah.
All right. How much video are you shooting at a session? Like in minutes when you get home or back to the studio to edit? You know, is there 60 minutes of video to edit?
There's usually between 300 and 400 video clips to edit.
Oh, so lots of little clips, little tiny ones.
Yes.
Are we talking 10 to 30 seconds?
Oh, less. Yeah, it's like 7 to 10 seconds.
Right, okay. Okay, so you're really looking for just little tiny snippets all the time.
That's right, which is what also makes it easier to switch to photos. So, you know, I'll shoot 10 seconds and then I'll switch it. I'll leave my camera in the exact same position because I've already composed that shot the way that I want it while I'm shooting the video. I'll just switch it over to photos, click the shutter, and then move on. So, you know, that's the way that I manage being able to get both kind of quickly. If I feel like I've gotten lots of video footage of that, then I might bring the camera to my face and, you know, spend a bit more time with the photos. But usually they're composed exactly the way that I'd want them anyway. And so rather than trying to change too much, then I'll just snap the photo and then move on to wherever the next camera position is that I want to be in.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Have you got any tricks for, let's say you're filming a clip and nothing happens and you know there's no chance you're going to use this clip. Do you say dud or do you, do something so you know that you don't even have to look at that clip, you can just get rid of it?
I don't. That would be very clever, but no, I don't.
Okay, so you really have to look through everything that you've shot at the end of the day and find out what's going to work and what's not.
Yeah, you know, it's easy when I'm looking in Premiere Pro and I've got all of the clips there, I can sort of do this like quick scrub through in the previews and I can see each scene and I can just quickly look through them. And generally, I try to edit the films as close to the session as possible because it's so much easier to remember everything. And as I'm shooting, I'm already editing it in my head. So I know when I've filmed a clip, I know whether that's going to go in the film or not. And instead of, you know, I edit in, so I pick the ones that I want to use rather than deleting the ones that I don't, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I don't typically, you know, look through them and say, no, not using that, not using that, not using that. I look through them and say, I want this, and I want this, and I want this.
Okay. I guess you'd still be throwing out or not using a lot of the footage that you've shot because they're condensed quite heavily, aren't they?
Yes, about 3 minutes.
Yeah, right, okay. And then when you're shooting the video, is it all handheld?
All handheld, yep.
Okay, so it really is, it's pretty mobile. You're shooting like a photographer, even though you're capturing video.
That's right, yeah.
Very cool, I like it. I don't know a lot about video because, like I said, I've never shot it. But if you want to convert to black and white, is it like shooting in RAW for stills? You shoot everything in color and do your conversions later?
Yeah. It's harder, color grading is harder with video because color grading video is you don't have nearly the amount of information as you do when you're editing a raw photo. So it's like you're editing a JPEG, basically. And so you have to get it as right in camera as you possibly can. And then you have some room to work with in post. And there's a lot of different options out there for color grading. You can use Lightroom to color grade. I find that really time consuming. Premiere Pro has a color workspace, and that's what I tend to use. And you can make any adjustments. As you said, you can make it black and white. You shoot it in color, and you can make it black and white later if you want. I've never made a black and white film. I tend to just stick with color. But I make really similar adjustments in the color workspace in Premiere Pro as to how I have shot the stills and edited them in Lightroom. So I try to match them as closely as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I saw on your website you got a birth video there as well.
I do.
That was pretty full on.
That was very full on.
So is that the first one you've done like that or have you done others?
It's the one and only that I've ever done.
Okay. So like, is that on your website so you know, potentially book more?
Oh, it's tricky. I can't be on call. I would love to be on call, but I can't be on call unless I have an au pair. When I have an au pair, I can be on call. But when I don't, then I can't be. And so that makes it really tricky. I have it on there, I think probably more for photographers that are doing my workshop and for the potential of, you know, if someone approached me and said they wanted me to film their birth, then I would definitely be open to it and I would want to try and make that work. But I don't necessarily promote it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That does make sense. Cool. Tell me about that day. Did you enjoy it or was it stress the whole time?
I loved it. I really, really loved it. You know, documentary is my thing. And with birth, I mean, they are so involved in what they're doing. They are not worried about you or where you are or any of that. So that for me is amazing. And it's amazing to just be a part of the entire experience. And it was stressful in a way because it happened very quickly. She called me at 6 a.m. I arrived at 8 a.m. and the baby was born at 9:10 a.m.
Oh, wow. So that wasn't her first then, I imagine.
No, it was her third.
Yeah, that was super quick.
Yeah. And she was an hour and 20 minutes away from me, drive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was a stressful day.
Yes.
How did the husband feel having you there filming?
He was fine. He was fine with it. Yeah.
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
Courtney, you have been so generous with the information and what you've shared today. I'm guessing because you teach this stuff, you go into even more detail in your course.
I do, yes.
What do you teach?
Well, I teach pretty much from start to finish how to create a film for either your own family or for clients. So what I teach is from the ground up. You don't have to have any experience with video. You don't have to have ever turned your camera to video. I teach you the settings that you need to have in camera. I make sure that you're comfortable with all of that and set up before you start. And then I take my students through a process, or the process that I use for storytelling, and explain the way that I work a scene, how I move around, and how to shoot for an edit. So what kind of camera angles, shot types, all about different camera movements, what to incorporate, and then, you know, adding in things like B-roll footage, when to do that, how to bring it all together and tell a story for your clients or for your family, and then all of the basics of just editing. So bringing it into Premiere Pro and building it from scratch, finding the music, exporting the video, putting it onto Vimeo, all of that. So it's literally from start to finish.
Does it matter if they're shooting Canon or Nikon or mirrorless?
It does not matter, no. I have instructions on the two main ones, so Canon and Nikon, but most of the time, the information that people need to, because every camera is different, so it's very impossible to cover all of the settings for every camera. There are general basic filmmaking settings that, like, you need to understand for video. Like, there's rules about shutter speeds and stuff like that, and you need to know which video system format to be using and stuff like that. There are some ISOs that are better than others and things like that. But, you know, the actual, like, mechanics of your camera and where to find where to make those changes, I can't possibly cover all of that. So I usually will refer people to their manuals, and I give instructions for the two main ones on my website. And then I find that most people are, like, they're quite capable of figuring that part out for themselves. And then if they've got questions or they need help troubleshooting, then I'll go and Google the manual myself and help them figure it out. So most of the time they already know that. I'm usually working with photographers that are very comfortable already shooting in manual mode. They usually know their cameras quite well anyway. So it's just a matter of finding those settings in the menu and figuring out where they are and changing them.
Cool. How do you do the deliveries? Is this face-to-face? Is it online?
It's all online. So there's a website, and they get, once they purchase the workshop, then they get a link to register for, like, a username and a password. And then the website is set out by weeks. So there's 4 weeks that are covered, and there's about 16 lessons all up. And the first week has, you know, basics, really basics, how to get started. And then there's an assignment at the end of that one. And then there's week two, which is more about storytelling. And then there's an assignment. Week three is more in depth on editing. And then there's a final project. And then week four touches on my marketing. So marketing, working with clients, working with families, working with small businesses. And all of that is just on the website. And another thing that I do, and the reason why I choose to deliver it through a website instead of, like, say, an ebook, is because I like to update things. So I like to add new tutorials. If I find that my students are asking questions about similar things often, then I'll go and make a tutorial for it and I'll add it to the website.
Okay. Do students have access to you?
Yes. So in addition to that, then they get a Facebook group And I'm in that Facebook group daily, so they can ask questions. They get an opportunity for direct critique, so they can submit work to be critiqued by me. And the way that I usually deliver that back to them is I sit and I do a screencast of me talking through their video, their film, and I critique it and then post that back. And then anyone can see the critiques as well. And I think that helps all of them sort of learn from each other as well. And my students are really the best. Like, they're so supportive of each other and everybody's just awesome.
So that group is only for students?
Yes.
That's cool. So you can not be afraid to share what you've done if you're not 100% happy with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Only they're going to see it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. That's awesome. All the details for this are at filminglifeworkshop.info. Is that right?
Yes.
Cool. Yes. So filminglifeworkshop.info. Okay, I'll add links to that in the show notes. Where is the best place for the listener to go and check out the work that you do for your clients?
CourtneyHolmes.com.au.
Okay, and I'm sure we can find you on Facebook and different groups as well by the sound of things.
Yeah, Courtney Holmes Film Photos on Facebook and Instagram.
Fantastic. Courtney, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for spending the time with us and for sharing what you have. It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, so I really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Courtney. Courtney, if you're listening, thank you so much for coming on, for being so open, for sharing so much detail about your business, how you do things, your pricing, the whole lot. You know, you were just fantastic, and I know the listener will appreciate every minute you spent with us today. I'm looking forward to following your progress and staying in touch and, yeah, wishing you every success for the future. For you, the listener, I hope you got as much from Courtney as I did. She will be part of the members Facebook group if you have any follow-up questions there. If you're listening to the free podcast, Courtney, I'm sure we'll be happy to come back and answer your questions in the comments area, which you'll find over at the show notes. They are at photobizx.com/211. And in the show notes, I've got examples of Courtney's work. I've got links to anything and everything that she mentioned, including her workshop details. It's all there in the show notes. So go and check them out, photobizx.com/211. Oh, and if you've got a follow-up question, if there's something that you wish that I asked Courtney that I didn't, that is the perfect place to ask her. Leave a comment in the comments area or hit her up in the Facebook group if you're a premium member and get an answer to whatever question you might have for her.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
Just a couple of announcements to close out today's show. The first one is a reminder to enter the slideshow competition. Remember, I have a 12-month pro plan for smart slides to give away, and I'm having a little competition to find out who's going to get that. So to enter and have a chance of winning, it's super simple. All you do is create a slideshow using between 5 and 10 images only, and your images need to be black and white. So black and white images, 5 to 10, and the brief is to show one family member in their natural environment. Oh, I should tell you a bit more before I tell you about the slideshows that I've received. So the entries are open. Well, they were open for 10 days from the last podcast episode. So they close this Wednesday, the 22nd of March, 2017. It's super simple. So you go to Smart Slides. I've got a link in the show notes. Grab a version of the software and you can use a trial version. You don't need to buy anything. It's free. And I've had entries on the free version coming in, which is just awesome to see. So you get the full usability access as a paying user of Smart Slides if you take the free trial. You just have a little trial triangle up in the top right, like a little watermark. So 5 to 10 images, black and white only, showing one family member in their natural environment. And I'm going to choose one winner from the slideshows that I receive. So you'll get a link from Smart Slides when you create your slideshow. Just send me the link to andrew@photobizx.com. And I'm looking for the slideshow that impacts me the most. Now that can be with humor, seriousness. It could be heartfelt. It could be fun and joyful, whatever. I just want to be moved. I want to be impacted by what you show me. So get creative. Get out there and do this. Like, it'll only take you a little while. You can go through your archives or you can go and shoot something specifically for it. So it's only 5 to 10 images. Super simple. You've got to have them ready to go. And you can win a pro plan for Smart Slides for 12 months. So well worth trying out for. And not only that, once you've created the slideshow, you've got it to use. So use it for your own marketing on Facebook or Instagram. Create an ad with it. Share it with your friends and family. I mean, it's not like you're sending it to me and it disappears. So, yeah, get motivated and push yourself to do something, be creative and shoot for yourself just for an hour or two. I love this email that I received from Kaylee McGlynn. She has entered the competition. She sent a slideshow over and along with that an email. And I won't read the whole email, but I did want to share this first paragraph. She says, "First of all, thank you for reinvigorating the desire to shoot more personal work. I haven't photographed my own family in way too long, and this little project was the perfect boost and reminder to capture them, as well as my clients' families." I love that. So all it took was a little gentle encouragement to enter the competition, and there's Kaylee off photographing her family and rediscovering how much fun that is to just shoot for fun. Shoot personal stuff. It's something that I was struggling with a year or two ago. I can't urge you enough to go and have a go at doing this and send me the link from Smart Slides and have a chance at winning. But more than that, do it for yourself. Go out and shoot some personal stuff of your own family. And I'd love to see it.
Connect with Andrew on Twitter. You can tweet him at Andrew Helmich.
To finish off this week, I mentioned in the last episode that Anna Puma, crazy Anna Puma, was running a workshop again, which I can't believe. And she said that she's going to be running, or she's going to be including a documentary session at the workshop. And my question was, and I was thinking out loud when I was saying this, how do you have a documentary photo shoot at a workshop? So Anna got back in touch with me and she said, I'm doing this for real. And what she plans to do is have a couple preparing breakfast or a meal in the kitchen in the place that she's going to be hosting the workshop. So it's a real kitchen, a real couple, and they're going to be preparing something. So, I mean, I've got pictures of flour flying everywhere and lots of fun and some cuddling and, yeah, just what couples do. And I think that is the perfect stage. I love this idea for creating a documentary session in a real-life situation that I guess is somewhat set up, but this is as documentary as you're going to get at a workshop. I love it. I think it's a fantastic idea. Anyway, I've got details about the workshop in today's show notes again. It's happening on the 22nd to the 25th of May in Brighton, UK. Like I said, I've got links in the show notes if you want to go and check that out. And I urge you to do that because it'll take you to Anna's website. And like I said last week, you've got to check out her about page and actually just check out her whole website. It's if you wondered what her personality was like, why I laugh and get enthusiastic talking about her and to her, have a look at her website and you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about right away. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got something out of it. I honestly would love to hear your feedback and your comments on what I'm struggling with. Those early mornings, spending too much time on the phone, or am I? Let me know in the comments or over in the Facebook group. I really would love to have a chat to you about it. All right, have an awesome week, and I will chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.